No sé lo que pasó. Am I doing enough for my people? Am I doing enough? Am I doing enough para la gente?
Para la gente.
Para mi gente.
Para la gente.
Para mi gente.
This is Radio Free Aslan, broadcasting from occupied territory.
Hello again. My name is Ernesto Morales, and I want to welcome you to another podcast courtesy of the Chicano Development Center and Radio Free Aslan. Tonight, we will be discussing the ongoing standoff in Arizona as regards to immigration and ethnic studies. On April 23rd of this year, Arizona Governor Jan Brewer signed into law Senate Bills 1070, the so-called Support Our Law Enforcement and Safe Neighborhoods Act, which is without a doubt the strictest and most draconian immigration law passed in the United States in decades. Just a few weeks later, on May 11th of this year, she also signed into law Senate Bill 2281, which has become known as the Anti-Ethnic Studies Bill. Specifically, this law was introduced and targeted toward the Tucson Unified School District's Chicano Studies program that currently services around 1,500 students per year. The text of the law specifically states that a school district or charter school in the state shall not include in its program of instruction any courses or classes that include any of the following: promote the overthrow of the United States government, promote resentment towards a race or class of people, are designed primarily for pupils of a particular ethnic group, advocate ethnic solidarity instead of the treatment of pupils as individuals. For this podcast, a group of ethnic studies instructors currently teaching at Michigan State University will discuss the ongoing crisis in Arizona, what it means to the field of ethnic studies, how this will impact Chicano communities across the country, and in their opinion, how this sort of attack on freedom of thought and speech should be viewed and organized against. Our first question tonight goes to Darren Brown, a PhD student in American Studies here at Michigan State. Darren, in your opinion, what does this type of law mean for ethnic studies programs across the country?
Well, I think the implications of this law is really immediate, and there's many. So one, we have this threat of what is considered an appropriate and legit education, i.e., a white European kind of narrative. The master narrative is returning into the fold again. And we see this debate going on in Texas with the textbooks that are trying to erase any kind of what they view as an quote unquote alternative history. Some other implications is some of the founding principles of ethnic studies are going to be lost. So the whole concept of self-determination, I think, is really integral to ethnic studies courses. And once that is stripped out of academia, you're going to have a lot of non-white students who are basically not going to receive that concept in terms of organizing their communities. So you're going to really have this severing of the town and gown, which I think is one of the chief benefits of ethnic studies, and that it does build between the academy and the community. And then just in general, what does this mean in terms of academics who are in ethnic studies right now at this moment? Are they going to mobilize and fight? My impression when this law was signed in Arizona was, okay, what are the faculty going to do, those who have tenure? Because my impression from moving from California and coming here to Michigan is a lot of the faculty here at Michigan State, they're really severed and don't have the ties to the community, and you don't see them come out and mobilize. You don't see them support the students. So my gut reaction was, okay, so what are the faculty going to do to prevent this bill from moving further, not just from the public schools in K-12, but there's been a lot of talk and a lot of emails that I've received that are saying that any kind of public funding, and this includes universities, that's gonna impact a lot of the ethnic studies programs that are in at the university level. And people in California who have been struggling to keep ethnic studies alive throughout the CSU systems, they're going through the same thing. So everyone's kind of waiting to see what is going to be the next move on the other end. And what I would like to see is a lot of the tenured faculty who are very secure and comfort in their content lifestyle actually step up and fight alongside a lot of the lower ranking adjunct faculty, junior faculty, and the students. And we just got to wait and see what happens.
Okay. Thanks, Darren. So tonight we also have with us Jose Moreno. Jose is currently a PhD candidate in the Michigan State University Chicano Latino Studies program. I think it's important to note that Michigan State offers a PhD in Chicano Studies. It's the second program in the country to do that. And I know, Jose, that you were recently in Arizona and that you were there in Tucson and that you went around to some of the classes and kind of saw some things that were going on. Could you give us a little bit of information about your impression about that trip?
Well, the program is building skills for people to go to college versus, political skills. What I mean by this is that the rhetoric you're hearing from, Mr. Horn is not correct of the programs, what's going on, really the reality of ethnic studies programs in Arizona. In 2000, the program was started at Tucson Unified School District under protests from students from the and people from the community. And they got together to form the Ethnic Studies Committee to start Ethnic Studies at the Tucson Unified School District. And what happened is that there's desegregation funds that had to be part of desegregating the schools in Tucson Unified District, and they formed this program. My impression of the program is great. Due to the fact that the classes I visit, the students are doing college grad level work. They're doing ethnographies. They're doing different skills that they're gonna use in college, and they're learning the culture and learning politics and learning the political system. And a lot of students that I talk to there, I visit with, they are first generation college students. Prior to the program, they had no sense of their culture and no sense of their customs and no sense of politics. So this program has provided a space for these people to, go to college and to graduate from high school. And the teachers in this program are great teachers because they have used different tools to reach out to their students. And they're highly trained in Chicano studies due to their undergrad experience or their graduate experience. And these teachers are experts in their area and they're great teachers that teach in the program. And these programs is necessary. I think Tucson Unified District is the model for ethnic studies program for K-12. And hopefully, the program will survive due to the fact that the money is federal funded through the state and through the local county, Pima County. So it's not state funds that are funding this program. And hopefully the program will survive, and I think it will due to the court process, and we'll see what happens in the coming months.
Well, and I think that there's a couple of things that's important. I know that, we're talking a lot about what's happening on the university level, but I think it's important to stress that this law that has been passed, and it was targeted specifically towards a public school system, K-12. And so, we're talking about kids that aren't in college, but that are preparing to go to college. So, in view of all of this, we're talking about what this means for ethnic studies across the program, but also, how do either of you think that this is going to impact, specifically right now we're talking about the Chicano community, but obviously when laws like this begin to pass, they're applied in a very broad manner, So, how do you think that this is going to impact communities of color across the country? Either of you.
Well, I think it's going to impact due to the fact that the reality is that ethnic studies is dead here in the United States. Not, I'm saying dead as financially dead. And since the 80s, it's been cut back, ethnic studies, due to internal struggles and due to hegemonic power tools that were able to co-opt Chicano studies and also ethnic studies. And the faculty and the teachers that teach ethnic studies at all levels have not taken a stand in recent years. Only a handful have. And I think the field has been declining since the 80s. However, the field always been up in the ground, and it always been a field of struggle. It was, you know, in the 60s and late 60s, those coalition of third world formations that formed the field. And I think that the reality is that people have co-opted, and people are not caring about the field anymore and caring about the individual careers. And I think that's the problem. Only a handful of people are, you know, upholding the roots ethnic studies and Chicano studies by using community, you know, tools. But in reality, it's not happening. The scholarship is different. The people that are teaching it are different. And their agenda is different. And I think that laws like this affects everybody that are color, you know, in the United States, because they're not going to be able to provide their culture background. Because in my belief, in order to teach a student of color, you have to incorporate cultural or political, you know, tools that they understand. Because in order to teach them a language that they don't know, they have to see it in their understanding of their world and their environment. And if you go deny ethnic studies, you're not going to, the student's not going to succeed in school.
Do you want to add to that, dear?
Yeah, I agree with most of what Jose said. The ethnic studies has been crumbling from the inside for the last 20 plus years. And I think the first step was, even though it was seen as a major achievement in getting the first school of ethnic studies at SF State, once it's incorporated within academia, it's basically controlled. And so it becomes another academic track. And once you lose the old guard who were instilled with these ideas of self-determination and community organizing, once that generation dies out, those types of professionals that go through the academy become less and less. And so you get more folks who are, say, theoretically inclined. And it would be hard to disagree with that statement, because I think we've all had our own clashes with these folks, right? They don't come from the same communities. They come from a more upper class environment. They may be more bourgeois, if you will. And look what's happened at MSU in particular. So we had the official divestment from the Administration for American Studies, which is kind of like the umbrella, if you will, for women's studies, ethnic studies, and what have you. And there wasn't really any kind of solidarity amongst some of the other programs on campus that you would think you would get support from, because they think that their program will be safe. So I think being included within that academy and allowing your own program to flourish, and once those tracks are separated instead of unified under, say, generically a term like an ethnic studies school, divide and conquer has already taken place. And so people are just interested in their own program. And so you're not going to have that third world liberation front that you saw in the late 60s and early 70s. And so, and also the whole thing with identity politics. I always get accused of being a masculinist, a cultural nationalist, and what have you. That's fine. Go ahead, call me what you like. But look at what has happened to ethnic studies in terms of men. There's not many men in ethnic studies anymore. It's most of the faculty that come through the academic tracks are women. Most of them are from a cushier economic background. A lot of them are into transnational theory and come from a transnational lifestyle where they lived all over the world and had all these experiences. And then, you know, this shows in their academic work and it gets championed as innovative and whatnot, but there's really no tied to the actual student who's probably taken their class and reading what they wrote and said, well, this doesn't make any sense to me because I wasn't afforded this lifestyle of globetrotting, if you will, right? So it's, I think internally ethnic studies has been crumbling. And so the question mark for me is, okay, what's going to be the response of these academics who are, say, nationally known, have multiple works, are they going to actually fight? Because the trend that I've seen over the last few years with the new breed of academics who are coming through cultural studies programs and ethnic studies programs, they give up their tenure track position. They just give it up. So who's going to fight? I would really like to see the newer generation fighting, because the old guard you could always count on. So it's not surprising to see the old guard come out and make a few statements and be in the press, because that's expected and they've always been fighting. I want to see these new faculty actually throw down, if you will.
Okay, so I mean, I think that you guys have brought up some really good points. I mean, we know that from the inception of Plan de Santa Barbara, that there's a whole outline for community involvement with Chicano studies, talks about creating centers in the community, and it gives outlines for the Barrio Action Center. You know, all of these different plans that were implemented to some degree with varying success, you know, throughout the Southwest mostly. So my question is this, all right, it's kind of a two-part question. Ethnic studies, is it revolutionary? Is it reformist? And how do we, as individuals who are currently involved in the teaching of ethnic studies and researching in ethnic studies, and particularly because of the sort of backgrounds that we all come from with, you know, in doing community organizing work, how do we help to make that connection back to the community?
Well, my research is focused on the evolution of Chicano studies in the academy. Well, this is a tough question because Chicano studies and ethnic studies is mainstream because people institutionalize the programs. In order to get money, in order to get funding, you have to institutionalize your program. So you got to co-opt your program. So is ethnic studies and Chicano studies revolutionary? No. At this point, no. Was the ideas? Yes. In the 60s, 70s, to change the world? Yes, people came out of there. But I don't think it was for that. I think people wanted access to the college level, because at the time period in 69, 68, you had about 50 or, you know, less than 100 people of color on campuses. So I think it was college access people wanted. And also, too, the other programs like anthropology, sociology, and history didn't want or care about Mexican subjects. And they wanted, you know, the subjects they written on were very subjective, nativist, and they're very racist. And when people wanted space, they said, basically, get the hell out of here. And it forced people to create these studies. That's why people decided to form and coalition around these studies. Yes, there was a handful of people who wanted to change the world, but I think those people changed their politics and went underground or left the academia scene during the late 70s, early 70s. The people that stuck around were these, they called the chosen ones that the academy calls them, the people that were not non-confrontational. Those people were able to get their PhDs in the 70s, early 80s, and they're able to keep and get jobs because of their non-threatening views, and they became part of the problem. And I'll mention one case is University of Notre Dame, which Julio Zamora trained over 25 PhDs, but 50 total started the program. And he got Ford money from the Ford Foundation to fund a Mexican-American Studies graduate program, which a lot of these individuals came out of that run Chicano Studies today, or train people that run Chicano Studies. And that's the problem when, you know, most of your students that you met were non-radicals or non-revolutionaries. They were reformist reactionaries. So the field has became very reactionary due to the training process. And it was a co-opted field. It was co-opted due to a lot of reasons.
Okay. So Darren.
Yeah, I agree. I feel that within ethnic studies, there's a lot of hope from the students to have a very invigorating class, very academically and self-fulfilling class. And I think a lot of that has been lost in that, hey, it's a part of the academy. It's just another class, right? And for teaching at San Francisco State for Asian American Studies and Ethnic Studies, there's a belief amongst some of the students that if you are of Asian Pacific Islander descent, you automatically going to get an A. So Asian equals A, you know. So it's going to be easy because what's your problem? You don't know yourself, you know, that kind of concept. So it's sad because, you know, even here in my interactions with some graduate students of color who fancy themselves as ethnic studies folks who really don't have a background in ethnic studies, but, you know, they have romantic visions of the late 60s and, you know, have a picture and so-and-so on their wall, and they write about it from some disparaging vantage point. Their critique of me is always that I'm too intimidating. But I'm just like, well, what's wrong with being intimidating? It's like, how were you schooled in ethnic studies? You say you're representing ethnic studies, and is it being intimidating something bad? It's like, is speaking your mind bad? Is representing, say, a powerful image negative in the classroom? Whereas if you have a different faculty who doesn't, say, uphold themselves in a certain character, you know, it's offering, say, an alternative to these mainstream images that a lot of students of color see throughout their life. They don't expect to see a non-white instructor, particularly a male instructor, to be in front of the classroom. So, you know, what's wrong with being intimidating and powerful? And when I started hearing those critiques, I'm just like, okay, so this is what's wrong with ethnic studies. People from within are beating each other up. It's like, instead of focusing the energies towards, say, the administration, the status quo and the powers that be, everyone's belittling each other and just chewing each other up like no end. And I think that's basically going to be the obstacle that needs to be overcome, because in talking with some folks about what's been going on, they always tell me, oh, I'm not going to do anything about it. And I'm like, why? Well, it's because I got to get my paper. So it's this whole thing, okay? So you got ethnic studies that's now, in some cases, a PhD somewhere. Some programs have a PhD, like CLS here at MSU, African American Studies here at MSU. And so they are even told by their advisors not to get involved. So what is that saying? Okay, so your self-interest supersedes everyone else's interest in maintaining the discipline? To me, that's like the ultimate hypocrisy. But then, you know, the question comes back to the self in that, hey, I'm trying to get my paper too. And so it's crazy. It's just a tailspin.
Okay. All right. So we had a couple more minutes left. I really want to thank you guys. I think this has been a great discussion. But what I really want to end on is I want to end on how you think we take Chicano studies or ethnic studies back to the community. How do we do this? How do we make it so that it fulfills this fantasy or this idea that people had in the beginning?
Well, I think we have to do is start, you know, I mean, doing community, you know, I mean, workshops, or set up a program in Chicano studies and African studies in the community by, you know, I mean, getting people together, or you know, get writing, you know, I mean, writing a proposal to some community center or some local area to fund a class and volunteer our time. And I think more Chicano studies professors, ethnic studies professors need to volunteer to do this, and they're not doing it. Okay. And that's one avenue, I think. The second avenue is that we have to, develop study sessions that are going to involve community and curriculum. And I think the curriculum there, I think the Tucson Unified District has a model. I think we should look at the model, and I think we should adopt it in the community. And I think we have to set up more centers, and that's what we have to do to have to fill, to see in the community, and build agency in the communities is by doing it. If no one do it, it's not going to happen.
Okay. And Darren, you did your undergrad at San Francisco State University, right?
Yeah, my master's.
And your master's. Okay. So, I mean, you come from a campus that has – that has the history of struggle for ethnic studies. I mean, there was a year-long strike by students in the Third World Liberation Front that shut down that campus for a whole year, which is, I think, the longest student strike in the history of the United States. You know, so I mean, you're coming with a unique perspective on all of this. I mean, what lessons can we take away from the San Francisco State University strike? And you know, how do you think we reach back into the community now?
Well, I think the 68 strike is very unique for multiple reasons. You had the Vietnam War, you had civil rights movement, black freedom struggle, what have you. And then there was a mass kind of political movement of dissent, particularly in the San Francisco Bay Area at the time with the Black Panthers, Brown Berets, R. War Quinn, Red Guards, a lot of political movement. Now that ethnic studies has been included within the academy, I think students now are a little more content and they see mobilization on a level of simply protesting and putting up signs and carrying banners and marching around the block is very fulfilling, I guess. And after they do that, they don't see any more work to do. And then I think about it and I'm like, well, maybe the problem is a lot of the instructors aren't showing them the next step, or maybe they get burnt out too fast. But I think we should see this as an opportunity. If ethnic studies is indeed going to be dismantled, we have to make the decision whether we're going to fight along with the ethnic studies professors and a related faculty to save it, or just let the academics fight. If we choose not to fight along with them, we should see it as an opportunity to erect our own institutions outside of the academy, whether it be applying for grants to erect a group like the XDC, getting private monies, having a grassroots organization, making your own bands, making cultural art, what have you. That's what we have to decide, where we're going to fight along with the academics or just let them fight it. And as an alternative, we have to erect something to fill that gap of ethnic studies being basically dismantled.
Okay. All right. So I want to thank everybody for participating in the discussion tonight. Once again, my name is Ernesto Morales. This has been a podcast of the Chicano Development Center and Radio Free Aslan. We want to thank Roberto Reyes and Louis Moreno for being our producers tonight. And we'll look for you guys on the next podcast.
This monthly podcast is brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to education and political empowerment through grassroots coalition building. We believe in the indigenous sovereignty of the Chicano people in the United States, and that true social and political change begins with the people. Our style of low-intensity organizing endeavors to build intentional communities within greater communities. The motivating force behind low-intensity organizing is to constantly challenge the status quo as to the treatment and economic status, not only of Chicanos and other indigenous people, but of all oppressed people. At the Chicano Development Center, we believe that resistance begins with education, organization, and preparation. We believe that Raza must take action on a regular basis, not just in times of crisis.
As J's, what we love the best.